The first explosion came just as darkness enfolded the city of On. The blast caught a few venturesome revelers outside the Ixian embassy, passing on their way to a party where, it was promised, face dancers would perform an ancient drama about a king who slew his children. After the violent events of the first four festival days, it had taken some courage for the revelers to emerge from the relative safety of their quarters. Stories of death and injury to innocent bystanders circulated all through the city, and here it was again, more fuel for the cautious. None of the victims and survivors would have appreciated Leto's observation that innocent bystanders were in relatively short supply. Leto's acute senses detected the explosion and located it. With an instant fury which he was later to regret, he shouted for his fish speakers and commanded them to wipe out the face dancers, even the ones he had spared earlier. On immediate reflection, the sensation of fury itself fascinated Leto. It had been so long since he had felt even mild anger. Frustration, irritation, these had been his limits. But now, at a threat to Hui Nori, fury. Reflection caused him to modify his initial command, but not before some fish speakers had raised from the royal presence their most violent desires released by what they had seen in their lord.
"God is furious!" some of them shouted.
The second blast caught some of the fish speakers emerging into the plaza, limiting the spread of Leto's modified command and igniting more violence. The third explosion, located near the first one, sent Leto himself into action. He propelled his cart like a berserk juggernaut out of his resting chamber into the Ixian lift and surged to the surface. Leto emerged at the edge of the plaza to find a scene of chaos lighted by thousands of free-floating glow-globes released by his fish speakers. The central stage of the plaza had been shattered, leaving only the plasteel base intact beneath the paved surface. Broken pieces of masonry lay all around, mixed with dead and wounded. In the direction of the Ixian embassy, directly across the plaza from him, there was a wild surging of combat.
"Where is my Duncan?" Leto bellowed.
A guard Bashar came racing across the plaza to his side, where she reported through panting breaths,
"We have taken him to the citadel, lord."
"What is happening over there?"
Leto demanded, pointing at the battle outside the Ixian embassy.
"The rebels and the Talaelaxu are attacking the Ixian embassy, lord. They have explosives."
Even as she spoke, another blast erupted in front of the embassy's shattered facade. He saw bodies twisting in the air, arching outward and falling at the perimeter of a bright flash which left an orange afterimage, studded with black dots. With no thought of consequences, Leto shifted his cart onto suspensors and sent it bulleting across the plaza, a hurtling behemoth which sucked glow-globes into its wake. At the battle's edge, he arched over his own defenders and plunged into the attacker's flank, aware only then of laser guns which sent livid blue arcs leaping toward him. He felt his cart thudding into flesh, scattering bodies all around. The cart spilled him directly in front of the embassy, rolling him off onto a hard surface as it struck the rubble there. He felt laser gun beams tickle his ribbed body, then the inner surge of heat followed by a venting belch of oxygen at his tail. Instinct tucked his face deep into its cowl and folded his arms into the protective depths of his front segment. The worm body took over, arching and flailing, rolling like an insane wheel, lashing out on all sides. Blood lubricated the street. Blood was buffered water to his body, but death released the water. His flailing body slipped and slithered in it, the water igniting blue smoke from every flexion place where it slipped through the sand trout skin. This filled him with water agony, which ignited more violence in the great flailing body. At Leto's first lashing out, the fishbeaker perimeter fell back. An alert Bashar saw the opportunity now presented. She shouted above the battle noise,
"Pick off the stragglers!"
The ranks of guardian women rushed forward. It was bloody play among the fishbeakers for a few minutes, blades thrusting in the merciless light of the glow-globes, the dancing of lasergun arcs, even hands chopping and toes digging into vulnerable flesh. The fishbeakers left no survivors. Leto rolled beyond the bloody mush in front of the embassy, barely able to think through the waves of water agony. The air was heavy with oxygen all around him, and this helped his human senses. He summoned his cart and it drifted toward him, tipping perilously on damaged suspensors. Slowly, he wriggled onto the tipping cart and gave it the mental command to return to his quarters beneath the plaza. Long ago, he had prepared himself against water damage, a room where blasts of superheated dry air would cleanse and restore him. Sand would serve, but there was no place in the confines of On for the necessary expanse of sand in which he might heat and rasp his surface to its normal purity. In the lift, he thought of Hui and sent a message to have her brought down to him immediately.
If she survived.
He had no time now to make a prescient search. He could only hope while his body, both pre-worm and human, longed for the cleansing heat. Once into the cleansing room, he thought to reaffirm his modified command,
"Save some of the face dancers!"
but by then the maddened fish-speakers were spreading out through the city, and he had not the strength to make a prescient sweep which would send his messengers to the proper meeting points. A guard captain brought him word as he was emerging from the cleansing room that Hui Nori, although slightly wounded, was safe and would be brought to him as soon as the local commander thought it prudent. Leto promoted the guard captain to sub-bashar on the spot. She was a heavy-set Nayla type, but without Nayla's square face, features more rounded and closer to the older norms. She trembled in the warmth of her lord's approval, and when he told her to return and make doubly certain no more harm came to Hui, she whirled and dashed from his presence.
"I didn't even ask her name," Leto thought, as he rolled himself onto the new cart in the depression of his small audience room.
It took a few moments of reflection to recall the new sub-bashar's name, QMO. The promotion would have to be reaffirmed. He lodged a mental reminder to do this personally. The fish-speakers, all of them, would have to learn immediately how much he valued Hui Nori. Not that there could be much doubt after tonight. He made his prescient scan, then, and dispatched messengers to his rampaging fish-speakers. By then the damage had been done, corpses all over On, some face-dancers and some only suspected face-dancers.
"And many have seen me kill," he thought.
While he waited for Hui's arrival, he reviewed what had just happened. This had not been a typical Tlaelaxu attack, but the previous attack on the road to On fitted into a new pattern, all of it pointing at a single mind with lethal purpose.
"I could have died out there," he thought.
That began to explain why he had not anticipated this attack, but there was a deeper reason. Leto could see that reason rising into his awareness, a summation of all the clues. What human knew the God Emperor best? What human possessed a secret place from which to conspire?
"Malky!"
Leto summoned a guard and told her to ask if the Reverend Mother Antioch had yet left Arrakis. The guard returned in a moment to report.
"Antioch is still in her quarters. The commander of the Fishspeaker Guard there says they have not come under attack."
"Send word to Antioch," Leto said. "Ask if she now understands why I put her delegation in quarters at a distance from me. Then tell her that while she is on Ix, she must locate Malky. She is to report that location to our local garrison on Ix."
"Malky, the former Ixian ambassador?"
"The same. He is not to remain alive and free. You will inform our garrison commander on Ix that she is to make close liaison with Antioch, providing every necessary assistance. Malky is to be brought here to me or executed, whichever our commander finds necessary."
The guard messenger nodded, shadows lurching across her features where she stood in the ring of light around Leto's face. She did not ask for a repetition of the orders. Each of his close guards had been trained as a human recorder. They could repeat Leto's words exactly, even the intonations, and would never forget what they had heard him say. When the messenger had gone, Leto sent a private signal of inquiry and, within seconds, had a response from Nayla. The Ixian device within his cart reproduced a non-identifiable version of her voice, a flatly metallic recital for his ears alone. Yes, Siona was at the Citadel. No, Siona had not contacted her rebel companions.
No, she does not yet know that I am here observing her.
The attack on the embassy? That had been by a splinter group called the Tlaelaxu Contact Element. Leto allowed himself a mental sigh. Rebels always gave their groups such pretentious labels.
"Any survivors?" he asked.
"No known survivors."
Leto found it amusing that, while the metallic voice provided no emotional tones, his memory supplied them.
"You will make contact with Siona," he said. "Reveal that you are a fish speaker. Tell her you did not reveal this earlier, because you knew she would not trust you, and because you feared exposure, since you are quite alone among fish speakers, in your allegiance to Siona. Reaffirm your oath to her. Tell her that you swear, by all that you hold holy, to obey Siona in anything. If she commands it, you will do it. All of this is truth, as you well know."
"Yes, Lord."
Memory supplied the fanatic emphasis in Nayla's response. She would obey.
"If possible, provide opportunities for Siona and Duncan Idaho to be alone together," he said.
"Yes, Lord."
"Let propinquity take its usual course," he thought.
He broke contact with Nayla, thought for a moment, then sent for the commander of his plaza forces. The bashar arrived presently, her dark uniform stained and dusty, evidence of gore still on her boots. She was a tall, bone-thin woman, with age lines which gave her aquiline features an air of powerful dignity. Leto recalled her troop name, Ilio, which meant dependable in old Fremen. He called her, however, by her matronymic, Nyshe.
"Daughter of Shay,
which set a tone of subtle intimacy for this meeting.
"Rest yourself on a cushion, Naishe," he said. "You have been working hard."
"Thank you, Lord."
She sank onto the red cushion which we had used. Leto noted the fatigue lines around Naishe's mouth, but her eyes remained alert. She stared up at him, eager to hear his words.
"Matters are once more tranquil in my city."
He made it not quite a question, leaving the interpretation to Naishe.
"Tranquil, but not good, Lord."
He glanced at the gore on her boots.
"The street in front of the Ixian embassy?"
"It is being cleansed, Lord. Repairs already are underway."
"The plaza?"
"By morning it will appear as it has always appeared."
Her gaze remained steady on his face. Both of them knew he had not yet reached the nubbin of this interview, but Leto now identified a thing lurking within Naishe's expression.
"Pride in her lord!"
For the first time, she had seen the God Emperor kill. The seeds of a terrible dependency had been planted.
"If disaster threatens, my lord will come."
That was how it appeared in her eyes. She would no longer act with complete independence, taking her power from the God Emperor and being personally responsible for the use of that power. There was something possessive in her expression. A terrible death machine waited in the wings, available at her summons. Leto did not like what he saw, but the damage had been done. Any remedies would require slow and subtle pressures.
"Where did the attackers get laser guns?" he asked.
"From our own stores, Lord. The Arsenal Guard has been replaced."
"Replaced?"
It was a euphemism with a certain nicety. Errant fish speakers were isolated and reserved until Leto found a problem which required death commandos. They would die gladly, of course, believing that thus they expiated their sin. And even the rumor that such berserkers had been dispatched could quiet a trouble spot.
"The arsenal was breached by explosives?" he asked.
"Stealth and explosives, Lord. The Arsenal Guard was careless."
"The source of the explosives?"
Some of Naishe's fatigue was visible in her shrug. Leto could only agree. He knew he could search out and identify those sources, but it would serve little purpose. Resourceful people could always find the ingredients for homemade explosives. Common things, such as sugar and bleaches, quite ordinary oils and innocent fertilizers, plastics and solvents and extracts from the dirt beneath a manure pile. The list was virtually endless, growing with each addition to human experience and knowledge. Even a society such as the one he had created, one which tried to limit the admixture of technology and new ideas, had no real hope of totally eliminating dangerously violent small weapons. The whole idea of controlling such things was chimera, a dangerous and distracting myth. The key was to limit the desire for violence. In that respect, this night had been a disaster.
"So much new injustice," he thought.
As though she read his thought, Naishe sighed.
"Of course. Fish speakers were trained from childhood to avoid injustice wherever possible." "We must see to the survivors in the populace," he said. "See to it that their needs are met. They must be brought to the realization that the Taleolaxu were to blame."
Naishe nodded. She had not reached Bashar rank while remaining ignorant of the drill. By now she believed it. Merely by hearing Leto say it, she believed in the Taleolaxu guilt. And there was a certain practicality in her understanding. She knew why they did not slay all of the Taleolaxu.
"You do not eliminate every scapegoat." "And we must provide a distraction," Leto said. "Luckily, there may be one ready at hand. I will send word to you after conferring with the Lady Hui Nori."
"The Ixian ambassador, Lord? Is she not implicated in—"
"She is entirely guiltless," he said.
He saw belief settle into Naishe's features, a ready-made plastic underlayment which could lock her jaw and glaze her eyes.
"Even Naishe?"
He knew the reasons because he had created those reasons, but sometimes he felt a bit awed by his creation.
"I hear the Lady Hui arriving in my anteroom," he said. "Send her in as you leave. And Naishe?"
She already was on her feet, but she stood expectantly silent.
"Tonight I have elevated QMO to sub-Bashar," he said. "See that it is made official. As for yourself, I am pleased. Ask and you shall receive."
He saw the formula send a wave of pleasure through Naishe, but she tempered it immediately, proving once more her worth to him.
"I shall test QMO, Lord," she said. "If she suits, I may take a holiday. I have not seen my family on Seleucus Secundus for many years."
"At a time of your own choosing," he said.
And he thought,
"Seleucus Secundus, of course."
That one reference to her origins reminded him of who she resembled.
"Hark al-Ada! She has Carino blood. We are closer relatives than I had thought."
"My lord is generous," she said.
She left him then, a new spring in her stride. He heard her voice in the anteroom.
"Lady Hui, our lord will see you now."
Hui entered, backlighted and framed in the archway for a moment, hesitancy in her step until her eyes adjusted to the inner chamber. She came like a moth to the brightness around Leto's face, looking away only to seek along his shadowy length for signs of injury. He knew that no such sign was visible, but there were still aches and interior tremblings. His eyes detected a slight limp, Hui favoring her right leg, but a long gown of jade green concealed the injury. She stopped at the edge of the declivity which held his cart, looking directly into his eyes.
"They said you were wounded, Hui. Are you in pain?"
"A cut on my leg below the knee, lord. A small piece of masonry from the explosion. Your fish speakers treated it with a salve which removed the pain. Lord, I feared for you."
"And I feared for you, gentle Hui."
"Except for that first explosion, I was not in danger, lord. They rushed me into a room deep beneath the embassy."
"So she did not see my performance," he thought. "I can be thankful for that." "I sent for you to ask your forgiveness," he said.
She sank onto a golden cushion.
"What is there to forgive, lord? You are not the reason, for
I am being tested, Hui."
"You?"
"There are those who wish to know the depths of my concern for the safety of Hui Nori."
She pointed upward.
"That was because of me?"
"Because of us."
"Oh, but who—"
"You have agreed to wed me, Hui, and I—"
He raised a hand to silence her as she started to speak.
"Antioch has told us what you revealed to her, but this did not originate with Antioch."
"Then who is—"
"The who is not important. It is important that you reconsider. I must give you this opportunity to change your mind."
She lowered her gaze.
"How sweet her features are," he thought.
It was possible for him to create only in his imagination an entire human lifetime with Hui. Enough examples lay in the welter of his memories upon which to build a fantasy of wedded life. It gathered nuances in his fancy, small details of mutual experience, a touch, a kiss, all of the sweet sharings upon which arose something of painful beauty. He ached with it, a pain far deeper than the physical reminders of his violence at the embassy. Hui lifted her chin and looked into his eyes. He saw there a compassionate longing to help him.
"But how else may I serve you, lord?"
He reminded himself that she was a primate, while he no longer was fully primate. The differences grew deeper by the minute. The ache remained within him. Hui was an inescapable reality, something so basic that no word could ever fully express it. The ache within him was almost more than he could bear.
"I love you, Hui. I love you as a man loves a woman. But it cannot be. That will never be."
Tears flowed from her eyes.
"Should I leave? Should I return to Ix?"
"They would only hurt you, trying to find out what went wrong with their plan." "She has seen my pain," he thought. "She knows the futility and frustration. What will she do? She will not lie. She will not say she returns my love as a woman to a man. She recognizes the futility, and she knows her own feelings for me, compassion, awe, a questioning which ignores fear."
"Then I will stay," she said. "We will take such pleasure as we can from being together. I think it is best that we do this. If it means we should wed, so be it."
"Then I must share knowledge with you, which I have shared with no other person," he said. "It will give you a power over me which—"
"Do not do this, lord. What if someone forced me to—"
"You will never again leave my household. My quarters here, the citadel, the safe places of the Sarir, these will be your home."
"As you will." How gentle and open her quiet acceptance, he thought.
The aching pulse within him had to be calmed. In itself, it was a danger to him and to the golden path.
"Those clever Ixians!"
Malky had seen how the all-powerful were forced to contend with a constant siren song, the will to self-delight.
"Constant awareness of the power in your slightest whim."
Hui took his silence to be uncertainty.
"Will we wed, lord?"
"Yes."
"Should anything be done about the Tlaelaxu stories, which—"
"Nothing."
She stared at him, remembering their earlier conversation.
"The seeds of dissolution were being planted."
"It is my fear, lord, that I will weaken you," she said.
"Then you must find ways to strengthen me."
"Can it strengthen you if we diminish belief in the god Leto?"
He heard a hint of Malky in her voice, that measured weighing which had made him so revoltingly charming.
"We never completely escape the teachers of our childhood." "Your question begs the answer," he said. "Many will continue to worship according to my design. Others will believe the lies."
"Lord, would you ask me to lie for you?"
"Of course not. But I will ask you to remain silent when you might wish to speak."
"But if they revile—"
"You will not protest."
Once more tears flowed down her cheeks. Leto longed to touch them, but they were water, painful water.
"It must be done this way," he said.
"Will you explain it to me, Lord?"
"When I am gone, they must call me Shaitan, the Emperor of Gehenna. The wheel must turn and turn and turn along the golden path."
"Lord, could the anger not be directed at me alone?"
"I would not know. The Ixians made you much more perfectly than they thought. I truly love you. I cannot help it."
"I do not wish to cause you pain."
The words were wrenched from her.
"What's done is done. Do not mourn it."
"Help me to understand."
"The hate which will blossom after I am gone, that too will fade into the inevitable past. A long time will pass. Then, on a far distant day, my journals will be found."
"Journals?"
She was shaken by the seeming shift of subject.
"My chronicle of my time, my arguments, the apologia. Copies exist, and scattered fragments will survive, some in distorted form, but the original journals will wait and wait and wait. I have hidden them well."
"And when they are discovered?"
"People will learn that I was something quite different from what they supposed."
Her voice came in a trembling hush.
"I already know what they will learn."
"Yes, my darling Hui, I think you do."
"You are neither devil nor god, but something never seen before, and never to be seen again, because your presence removes the need."
She brushed tears from her cheeks.
"Hui, do you realize how dangerous you are?"